is the Pop Medic Podcast for July 8th, 2015. Hum a patriotic song.
Proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Bill,
Jeremy,
Captain Amerimike,
Crystal,
Amanda.
The July 4th holiday is over, but our patriotism is boundless! Boundless! Just because you got nauseous eating grilled meat and learned the hard way about fireworks safety doesn't mean you can't celebrate America all year.
Amen, brother.
You don't need two hands to eat a hamburger.
That's on a bun.
That's right.
And celebrating America is exactly what we're going to do on this episode today. This episode, America All Year. You also may have noticed this episode sounds like it was recorded in a closet. That's because it was. Apparently, having a children's library is more important than our little podcast show. So while the children's department at the main library downtown is being renovated, we will be recording in various closets, bus stations, pet stores around town until we can get our recording space back. Every time we record in a weird place, we will be adding summer challenge points to our accounts. That's why you hear the echo.
Me while I go on a brief Jeremy-style tangent. Last week was E3, the Electronics Entertainment Expo, the biggest video game trade show of the year. Every major video game company presents an hour or two press conference displaying what they hope to be the future awesome best-selling games of the year.
Please note, he clenched his fist. He
shook it in the air.
That's right. In righteous awesomeness. Unfortunately, because I was at work, I missed the Microsoft press conference, so I was trying to catch up on it this weekend, and I got to see the trailer for Mass Effect Andromeda. Mass Effect is a science fiction role-playing game, yet at the beginning of the trailer, there appeared to be Monument Valley, and who's that on the soundtrack? Johnny Cash singing Ghost Riders in the Sky?
It's a good song.
I was like, ooh. So ever since I went to the Johnny Cash Museum last year, I've been beginning to listen to meet some more Johnny Cash. And what luck for me in this podcast this week. He has a whole series of albums recorded with Rick Rubin under his American Recordings label. Johnny Cash had been one of, if not the most successful recording artists at Columbia for decades. But in the 80s, he had hit something of a wall creatively after releasing something in the neighborhood of 80 albums. Not to mention getting a minor addiction to painkillers.
What happens?
After he got hit by an ostrich at his house. Which is like, how many people get smacked in the chest by an ostrich? After being dumped from the label in 1986, he tried to record at Mercury Records for a while, and he recorded with a country supergroup called the Highwaymen for a couple of years, but nothing really like seemed to pan out. And
he was on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Yeah. At the museum, they have clips of him, and I'm just like, but Johnny Cash is so cool. The Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman is...
I like that Crystal's here because she's on my team.
Oh, no.
We like Dr. Quinn.
Oh, ladies team up. Oh, no. that's a show that exists. Jane Seymour was the best Bond girl?
Incorrect.
Oh. But Solitaire.
Grace Jones.
Oh, no.
Ava Marine.
So, in 1993 or so, the producer Rick Rubin was looking for a new act for his label, somebody established but unsigned. Cash was on the top of his list. He went to talk to Cash after a concert. Cash asked him, so what do you want, you know, what are you thinking, what do you want, you know, what ideas do you have? And Rubin's like, you know, what is something that you've always wanted to do? Cash had the idea of an album back in the 80s that he called Late and Alone, or it'd be just him and a guitar with no background singers, no, like, you know, reverb, no, like, you know, orchestras and all that stuff. So Rubin recorded Cash singing in his own living room, just him and a guitar. The album American Recordings went on to rejuvenate his career, winning Best Contemporary Folk Album at the Grammys, and has been ranked by Rolling Stone as one of the greatest albums ever. But we don't have it. What we do have is all the follow-up American albums. American 2 Unchained featured Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers as the backup band, which is kind of amazing. It also won a couple of Grammys and has a cool cover of Soundgarden's Rusty Cage.
I'm going to break.
As interpreted by Jeremy.
She does a Beck song down there, too.
I also like the song I Never Pick Cotton to Bed on Hell if yes. you repeat all morning.
That song rules.
Is outstanding.
I never pick cotton like my mother did and my brother did and my sister did and my daddy died young working in a coal mine when I was just a baby too little for the cotton sack I played in the dirt while the others worked till they couldn't straighten up their backs.
American 4, because, you know, I can't go through everyone because time's limited. American 4, The Man Comes Around, was the last album to be recorded in his lifetime, his 87th album. By this point, he knew he was dying, and that June Carter Cash had recently passed away, so the album has a much, like, sadder, somber tone than previous ones. It has the song Hurt, which is one of the most depressing songs I've ever heard in my life. I was to it once this week. That's enough for the rest of the year.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend.
Isn't that the one he won MTV Awards for?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a video on YouTube of his last interview. It was with Kurt Loder, and a lot of it's about how, like, you know, how pleased. How do you feel about this video? And like, here's Johnny Cash. He's like a million years old. Like, I'm so,
not yet.
You know, not so proud of that video.
I really like Hung My Head on there, even though it's a Sting song.
Hey.
I still like it.
Oh.
That's
so cool.
No offense to his majesty, the tantric master. I really like that song a lot.
But I did like the title track, Man Comes Around, is pretty amazing.
That song's pretty great, too. It's like a creepy Bible verse.
Yeah.
And his awesome. Voice is all shaky.
Yeah, like, you know.
It was creepy.
Do we still have, didn't we have a box set that was Johnny Cash Reads the Bible?
Yes.
We still have.
Oh, yeah.
What's the, he reads the entire New Testament.
New Testament, okay.
Cool. So what have we got, man?
So I just want to say, too, that my 4-year-old niece loves Ring of Fire.
Yeah!
And I'm not sure how she heard it, because my brother hates country music. So I just, she were in the car that day, she just started singing it. And I'm like, why is she singing Johnny Cash? Okay, so anyway, moving forward. Thank you, Johnny Cash. I hope everybody had a very nice 4th of July holiday. And 4th of July.
4th of July holiday?
Too much party over the weekend. Sorry, everybody.
Praise be to Allah.
And I just want to say, I'm so glad to be here today through the miracle of technology, even though I'm technically still on vacation. And if someone could pass me some lotion, I have a bit of a sunburn. Anyway, I have a feeling that the majority of our listening audience, with maybe the exception of Gary from Perth, have some sort of barbecue or potluck over the holiday weekend. And, you know, what really makes a celebration of America better than great American food? Now, I'm not talking about burgers and fries. Those are for amateurs. I'm talking about iconically American foods like sassafras, mint juleps, Spam, and the ever-wonderful peach cobbler. In her recent book, The American Plate, historian and author Libby O'Connell gives us a culinary history of our great country in what she has decided are the best 100 finger quotes bites. Now, O'Connell is the chief historian and historic food expert at the History Channel. I didn't even know that that could be a job option, much less how to go about getting it. So, you know, thanks a lot, Career Day.
Yeah.
And I just happened to come across this book. I was browsing on the shelf, and I just saw it sitting there. I'm like, oh, cool, this looks really great, because I like food books. And then I started reading it, and like the beginning says that it's semi-encyclopedic, semi-encyclopedic. And I got kind of sad because I don't want to read just a bunch of, you know, generic encyclopedia entries. I really wanted there to be more of a story. But the good news is that there is a story. O'Connell organizes her book into 10 bites per, like she picks 10 time periods and she puts 10 bites per time period. And each time period is roughly 30 years. Some at the beginning are a little bit longer because they're a little bit more generic. But that's about what it averages out to. So each bite gets a story, and each story really pulled me in. She also has recipes that she's included, but I didn't try any of them, partially because some of them were really hard and partially because some of them are really historical. Did you really need a snack of pemmican at this point in your life?
What is pemmican?
Isn't that a chewing tobacco?
It's kind of like hardtack, I think. Like it's kind of like a cracker of some kind.
Pemmican.
Dried meat pounded into a powder and mixed with hot fat and dried fruits or berries, pressed into a loaf or small cakes, originally prepared by North American Indians.
Although I have to say, like when I was in middle school, like in my history class, we had to do projects for each quarter, and this book would have been really awesome at that point because I could have done like historical recipes and made them and shared it with everybody, maybe not pemmican. So if you like food and history, then this book is definitely for you. And if you'd like more food books and want to read and explore, this summer our off-the-shelf blog team is having a Savor Summer series. So we're bringing you all kinds of fun food facts and recipes from local cookbooks to special ingredients to family food memories. And if you can't get enough food or you're looking for some last-minute summer challenge activities, you can check out NPL and help us savor summer. All right, Mr. Bill.
It's a good time. Well, I'm discussing the Dust Bowl troubadour, Woody Guthrie. Even though Mr. Guthrie's life was cut short, he died at the age of 55 of Huntington's disease. His influence is still felt today. Bob Dylan, Harry Chapin, Big Pete Seeger, Joe Strummer, and Bruce Springsteen all count Woody Guthrie as a major influence. Mr. Guthrie's best-known song is probably This Land Is Your Land. And in doing research, I found out that This Land Is Your Land was a critical response to Irving Berlin's God Bless America. It seems Woody Guthrie got sick and tired of hearing Kate Smith singing it all the time on the radio, which is understandable because I remember, well, this is kind of sidetracked, but I was telling it anyway. I'm old enough to remember the Mike Douglas show, and she co-hosted one week. I thought the woman would never shut up. Anyway, Guthrie considered God Bless America complacent and unrealistic. I just found this out myself in the words of Bob Dylan. It blows my mind. We have This Land Is Your Land on the CD, a CD called Folk Hits Around the Campfire. It's also on the Smithsonian Folkways Roots Collection, another CD we have in our collection. Interesting to note, we have Woody Guthrie's long-lost novel, House of Earth, which was published in February 2013, and Johnny Depp's publishing company published the book. So, if you didn't know who Woody Guthrie is, shame on you. Now would be a good, excellent time to get acquainted, just in time for the 4th, or we're so America, so.
Or the 8th.
Yeah. I heard that all year.
Or after 4th.
Jolly.
Do we have those albums that Wilco did with Billy Bragg? Do you guys know?
We'll have to double check on that.
Mermaid Avenue.
Yeah. So those were Woody Guthrie songs recorded by Billy Bragg and Wilco.
Crystal.
All right. Well, when I think about being an American like Amanda, food immediately comes to my mind.
We're eaters.
That's right. From the over-processed favorites of my childhood, like you mentioned, Spam and Velveeta cheese.
I love Velveeta cheese.
Yeah.
To the tasty and exotic dishes I've sampled in restaurants run by new Americans, talking about you, Sitar, and you, Thai Phuket. I consider myself blessed to have an abundant supply of scrumptious nourishment. Which brings me to one of my favorite food groups, dessert.
Ooh, yeah.
Diabetes.
Hello. Everything goes better with cake.
Let me just ask my fellow podcasters real quick. Have you all been to the Loveless Cafe?
I have. It was a life-changing experience.
Yes, indeed.
My wife's vegan.
They need vegetables.
Yeah, they have boring vegetables.
They're fried in bacon fat, but it's okay. It's pretty, it's just a little bit. It's fine.
Just a little bit of pixel.
It's pretty fresh. It's good. I bet Annie and Lon Loveless never dreamed their little restaurant would become world famous when they first started selling chicken and biscuits back in 1951. So I'd like to recommend a couple recipes out of one of the cafe's published cookbooks. It's called Desserts from the Famous Loveless Cafe. Simple southern pies, puddings, cakes, and cobblers from Nashville's landmark restaurant. It's by their pastry chef, Elisa Huntsman. So the first recipe I'd like to recommend is the Harpeth Valley Hummingbird Cake. Now, Mike can tell you I'm a fan of hummingbird cake. We brought one.
Yeah.
Had one at a book club meeting last year. If you don't know the history of the hummingbird cake, the original recipe was first published in Southern Living in the late 70s, and it remains their most requested recipe. The Loveless version is a nice takeoff on the original. If you've never had hummingbird cake, it's a moist cake where the sweetness is somewhat tamed by the inclusion of pecans. Main ingredients include bananas, pineapple, hummingbird brains, pecans.
Oh, you thought that would just flip by us. I can really taste the brain.
Right. Brains.
It's got a lot
tastes
of my
like
mind.
Chicken.
That's right. No hummingbirds are harmed in the making of this cake.
Because they're put in live.
That's right. So,
I think we had the vegetarian version not last year.
but I made a little corny joke. But it has bananas, pineapple, pecan, cinnamon, and yummy homemade cream cheese frosting between each layer of the cake. It's simply divine with a glass of tea, sweet or you decide. Now moving on to the next standout recipe in the collection. If you're like me and prefer to eat locally grown fruits and veggies, now is the perfect time to make their upside down peach cake. Upside down cakes are a perfect choice for the beginning baker, as you basically just mix ingredients together in your skillet and bake it in the oven. Now the advanced technique required here is blanching the peaches to remove the skins, which is pretty easy. You just boil some water and put your peach down there for about 30 seconds, take it out and zoop, take off the peach skin.
That's a technical food term, by the way.
That's right.
You have to make that sound.
The only onomatopoeia that is also a technical cooking term.
There you
That's
go.
That's right. So check it out, Desserts from the Famous Loveless Cafe. And podcasters are always happy to sample desserts.
We really are.
Yes.
Unless it contains real hummingbirds, then we might pass.
Then you might pass. All right, Jeremy, what you got?
I kind of want to eat a hummingbird. I've watched.
I've had 28 blackbirds baked in a pie, but never had it.
I've eaten a crow before. It goes really well with egg on my face.
Had a slice of humble pie.
Let's keep it going. Here we go.
You know, come on and be the knuckle sandwich for you.
We can't let them sit by each other.
Yeah. Need to separate you two.
All right.
Cool.
So, in the great tradition of America, I'm going to just rest on my laurels and talk about the same thing I always talk about. I'm going to talk about Gerard Jones' Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and the Birth of the Comic Book. Now, this is the story of the birth of the comic book in America. And like most real-life origin stories, the story of how comics came to be can be a little muddy, but it's generally accepted to be an American invention, though maybe American innovation is maybe a better term. Comic strips have been around for a long time, for decades, prior to Max Gaines, who is generally credited with taking a bunch of comic strips, putting them in a magazine, and then selling them for a bright, shiny dime. Max Gaines is the father of William Gaines, who went on to found EC Comics and Mad Magazine, in case you didn't know. So on this simple idea, an industry was born. Now, these were scrappy business people, some of them criminals, and they created the American comic book industry from the ground up. They were publishers, and they got into the comic book game because it became popular. They were the children of immigrants, primarily Jewish, and almost all based in New York City. They had been publishing detective pulps as well as spicy magazines that were certainly tame by today's standards, but they were constantly running afoul of the law for being labeled pornographic. So this is a story as American as you can get without a pie or a gun in it. And I think maybe there are both of those in this book. Jones digs through what he calls the tall tales. Jones digs through what he calls, quote, the tall tales, drunken misunderstandings, and self-protective fudgings that have shaped the accepted history of this oddest of American art forms. And what he finds is as entertaining as the funny books themselves. These publishers didn't think about creators' rights or any of that sort of stuff that people enjoy today. They thought about chasing the big bucks that National, now DC Comics, was making once they introduced Superman. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster's long battle with DC over the rights to their creation Superman, as detailed previously by Amanda on her superhero show, is a major focus of this book. It's kind of the spine, I guess, of it. It gives kind of a heartbreaking emotional core to the story, and it's just kind of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the abuses heaped upon creators throughout the industry's history. Also discussed, artist Roy Lichtenstein's rip-off paintings of comic book panels, because he just took panels that artists had painted, and then he made a lot of money, and they made nothing, and they were shamed for being comic book artists, and he was celebrated as being a fine artist. There's also the infamous Senate hearings chaired by Tennessee Senator Estes Kefauver, in which comic books were demonized by the 1950s answer to Dr. Phil, a psychiatrist named Frederick Wortham, whose book Seduction of the Innocent claimed, among other things, that comic books turn children into juvenile delinquents. He didn't say whether comics would turn children into library employees who bloviate about them on podcasts a lot. Men of Tomorrow is a great American story because it showcases the innovation of the countless artists and writers this country has produced, the beauty, wonder, and joy that can emerge at the intersection of art and commerce, and the absolute ruthlessness of the capitalist system. So enjoy! For America!
I want to bloviate about more comics.
Do it! What's stopping you? This is America!
That's a big word.
Tickle My Fancy too, by the way.
Oh, right.
You want to do it right now?
Yeah.
Maybe the library has it.
Maybe it don't.
Either way, it's tickling our fancy. Mac.
Yep. I think Bill was first.
Oh, creepy murder voice.
Bill. Bill. Do I have to start over?
No.
No, he's going to splice it down.
Okay, Tickling My Fancy is our Movies at Main on Saturday, July 11th, 2015 at 2 p.m. in our main auditorium on 615 Church Street. We are showing Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. A brief synopsis, Hellboy and his friends battle an evil elf determined to take over the world. It's free, and do I need to say more?
Oh, you had me at free.
Jeremy.
That same day, I found out yesterday, Miss Yvonne from Pee Wee's Playhouse is going to be at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds signing autographs. It's $10 admission, $5 if you get a costume. This is some sort of comic convention or something, too.
That would be Nashville Comic and Toy Day.
So that starts at 10, so you could go get Miss Yvonne's autograph and then come see Hellboy. But tickling my fancy this week is the 33 and a third series just released a book by author Andrew Shartman called Koji Kan. Yeah, laugh at his name, everybody. Let's laugh at his name.
How's it going, Mr. Shartman?
Mr. Shartman.
What's that smell, Shartman?
Wow. He's also a composer.
He invented the brown note.
Wow. He also wrote Koji Kondo's Super Mario Brothers soundtrack. If you're not familiar with the 33 and a third series, they're very small books and they have like full length discussions and explorations of classic albums. There's stuff like The Beach Boys, Smile.
They Might Be Giants, Flood.
They Might Be Giants, Flood.
Jeff Buckley's Grace.
Yeah, Michael Jackson's Dangerous for some reason.
I've heard the Celine Dion one on her album or whatever.
Yeah, supposed to be Let's really Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste.
Yes.
So the Ramones. So
that one is good. You learn a lot about the history of popular music in America.
Yeah, they're really interesting books and like kind of, you know, they can be hit or miss like anything. There's also some that are like one is a novel, one is a memoir. So it's a pretty broad range of stuff. The one about Elvis Costello's armed forces is really strange. This one is about the soundtrack to Super Mario Brothers, the 30-year-old Nintendo game, which was packaged with the NES that children across America played and enjoyed.
And if you don't care about Thundercats, then you don't care about... Yeah, really. was a callback to something that's not going to be until later in the show, yeah. So it's totally out of context.
Wait for it.
This soundtrack totals just under 3 minutes of music, which is pretty fascinating, but as displayed by Mike, pretty much anyone can hum it. I hum it constantly. It's sort of like the whole music in my brain from all the games. They're constantly kind of coming back to me, and I'm not even what you would call a gamer. So we do not have a book in our system. Yeah. Wow.
I'm telling you, he sings every episode.
I'm going to
have my
Mike
Sings card.
I'm gonna I didn't know I had a talent, you know.
Who knew?
Well, luckily this is a short one. World Market has one of those make your own 6-pack of beers deals, which I partook of last week. The best one by far for me was Blackstone Brewery's Strawberry Picnic, a strawberry infused English pale ale. That is the best fruit flavored beer ever. Of course, you know I'm biased, but with the Frankenberry, the sweet strawberry flavor almost completely masks the beer aftertaste. Mm. It's their summer beer, though, so go stock up. What have you got, Crystal?
Wow.
See?
Brevity is the essence of wit.
Thank you. Thank you, Mom.
Tickling my fancy this week is the wonderful group of cat lovers and volunteers with the Nashville Cat Rescue. June was Adopt a Shelter Cat Month. And I adopted one of the kitties that they had saved from a borderline hoarding situation. Ooh. Hey, Mr. Bigfoot, if you're listening. Aww. So you can follow Nashville Cat Rescue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I'll close as one of their favorite hashtags, Adopt Don't Shop.
Nice.
So I'm going to keep with our American theme of the day and talk about an iconic American composer that I think everyone who has watched 5 seconds of TV in the last week has heard. If you watched a fireworks display set to music, you heard him. If you went to any kind of 4th of July parade, he was there, even though he's been dead for 80 years. And I'm talking, of course, about America's March King, the immortal John Philip Sousa. Some of his iconic marches include The Thunderer, Semper Fidelis, The Washington Post, and of course, The Stars and Stripes Forever, which I didn't realize is actually the National March of America. I didn't know that we had
that. March of Dimes.
Party on. So Sousa actually joined the U.S. Marine Band just after the Civil War, and he spent the next 50 years or so of his life writing and conducting marches. He even developed the mighty Sousaphone, which if you've ever seen, if that's the guy that has like the tube that wraps around his body.
Oh, yeah.
So he could do that with the big horn above your head so that your tuba player wouldn't have to carry it physically in his arms for like mile marches. Like he could support it with his body.
That's a Sousaphone, that's not just the tuba?
No, it's a special.
It's a kind of tuba.
He didn't build it, but he designed it. Sure. Like another gentleman built it. And so I have to say, if I were a tuba player, I would love JPS for that. Sousa kind of gets forgotten, except for the 4th of July, because his music isn't the most relaxing. You don't usually go home from work, grab a glass of wine, and crank up the Washington Post march. Thank you.
he also did the Monty Python theme.
He did. I was not aware of that.
The Liberty Bell Act. Huh? I think it's what it's called.
It could be.
Yes, for corrections.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, the American writer writes for the British comedy troupe. But anyway, so if you need to get your march on, I definitely recommend the American Master of Marches. Plus, I like marches because they always have that little stinger note at the end to let you know when they're done, so you don't have to guess when you have to clap. They're done.
Stinger.
It was a low blow about Duke Wellington. I think Mike probably knew that Wellington defeated Napoleon, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty posh.
Too polite to tell me to go eat it.
You know, your brain, your whenever you talk, my brain goes elsewhere.
He likes
floating in the cloud. Talking about Jackson Land, what?
The Bernard Cornwell nonfiction book that Mike had mentioned in passing was Waterloo, the history of 4 days, three armies, and three battles. You can get that right now from the library.
It's waiting for me downstairs, oh boy.
Oh.
Yep.
You have to share.
That's right.
The Maria Bamford Netflix show is actually going to be called Lady Dynamite.
I said Lady Justice, which is the comic book.
No other details as of yet. Snarf is also a character from the cartoon Thundercats.
I could have sworn we mentioned that, but you know, you did put it.
Started
you put it in the episode.
After the credits.
It was
kind of talking
amazing.
About Thundercats without actually referring to Thundercats.
Because you have to be aware of that. You got to know that.
See, people who are under 35 may be unaware.
Yeah.
Snarf is a minor character in the cartoon Thundercats.
Yeah, losers.
There's
a new one in the system. I saw it the other day.
Oh yeah, I saw the pilot. It's not very good.
No, the Thundercats show. It's like
it's worse than the original one.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Are they really cats?
They're like cat people.
They're like hybrids.
Lycanthropic.
Oh.
Yeah.
They
don't change.
Anthropomorphized.
Yeah, that's the word you're looking for.
If you want to
watch Thundercats?
No.
Good for you. If you want to be very confused, see the first episode, they're all naked. As a small child, I was confused. And
like the naked.
Fur. Naked, 100% naked. But they didn't have like.
They're 100% naked.
Oh, yeah. And then they put on clothes in the second episode.
Hey, we better cover up.
Chitara never really wears clothes.
She has like a one
so
piece.
Like,
you
know. Oh, Giggles wears them.
Well, kind of.
They wish.
Schnarf is. Anyway,
the previous week's episodes never end. I do
have a minor correction.
Were there any other corrections?
I mean, minor correction! In the genealogy collection, we have stuff mainly from the eastern United States with some South Midwest stuff, not just the South. I got a book in my cart last week from Michigan and a lot of stuff from Missouri. We've gotten boring genealogy books detailing deathly adult statistics from villages in the UK and Ireland.
That one's for Brian.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Wales is in there somewhere, buddy. So, just to say, if you want to come to the library and not use our databases, we've got books, too.
There are four countries in the United Kingdom, and probably most Americans cannot name them all. Okay, for more information and where you can find out which four countries are actually in the United Kingdom, you can go to
www.library.nashville.com. Or.
And our theme music is by
Andy.
Next week,
French.
Ooh la la.
I thought
Jacques.
French.
Like the dressing.
Like the dressing.
I used to eat the hell out of
it. My grandma loves that's her dressing.
Yeah.
Is that mayonnaise and ketchup mixed together, basically?
No, it's not mayonnaise.
It's a red color, but it's just.
America! Glorious! Taking beauty and making it ugly.
I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans.